White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 267.
In this city, some people disappear and are forgotten, never to be seen again.
We found more bones?
Definitely a gravesite.
So it's a homicide.
I can't think of a legit reason to bury a body up here.
But the past is never the past. It reaches up out of the dirt to grab you, and it doesn't let you go.
Every murder is the tale of a city.
I got a feeling that I can't let go.
And there are some who disappear under the cover of darkness, never wanting their true faces to be seen.
Need a lift?
Man, light him up.
This is my vehicle. Those are my plates.
Hey, we got a body back here!
Mr. Waits, we're gonna charge you with murder.
I'll take that lawyer now.
The job is a mission. There's only one way to carry it. With relentless fury.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence. Started. All engines are started. We have ignition. 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff. We have a liftoff, and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center. The Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and this week we are joined by two guests to talk about a very, very cool subject that's near to all of our hearts. We're joined by my semi-regular co-host on this show and regular co-host on the Wishbone, John Ringer. Welcome back aboard, John.
Thanks, Van.
And we have a special extra guest tonight. We have from the former co-host of the mothership Earth Station One, among many other things, and novelist, Bobby Nash. Welcome aboard the White Rocket Show, Bobby.
Thanks, man. It's good to be back. It's also nice to get out of that airlock over at the ESO station.
It gets stuck in there. It gets stuck in there sometimes. It's kind of rusty. Yeah,
they kind of banished me off to the side. No.
They need to put some WD-40 on that thing. It's kind of getting creaky.
All right, yes.
Well, I have you guys on here tonight because we're going to talk about the works in general and some specifics of Michael Connelly. Now, I want to first get from you guys how you guys came to be Connelly fans, but let me just say up front that it's only been fairly recently that I've started considering myself a Michael Connelly fan, because he's one of those writers, and we're going to talk about, let me just tell the folks up front, we're going to talk about the Harry Bosch novels, we're going to talk about the Bosch TV show on Amazon, we're going to talk about the Lincoln Lawyer novels, we're going to talk about the Lincoln Lawyer movie, and we're going to talk about anything else we can think of that relates to those subjects, okay? So, but we are going to put the TV show last because since it probably has a slightly broader audience than books, I don't want to throw out too many spoilers for the TV show. It's one thing to spoil a book, I guess, but spoiling TV shows, people tend to lose their mind. So we'll kind of do the TV show last. And if you haven't seen, like, season 3, for example, you can just stop the show after we talk about season 2 and come back to it later after you've seen season 3. So, but I was just saying, I haven't been a Michael Connelly fan for long. I've read these books for several years now. I've got a bunch of them on audio, and I've got a bunch of them in paperback. And I guess I was more of a fan of the properties, whereas Connelly I looked at as, you know, he just does. It's one of those things that's deceptively simple. I find over and over in life that I'm a fan of things that are deceptively simple, where I think, oh, I like the product. But it seems like it was so easy to produce, so the creator can't be that good. And then after a while, you realize it's really good. The creator is very good. So we can get into that a little bit as we go along. But Bobby is our special guest tonight. Why don't you tell us first, how did you come to be a Connelly and or Bosch, et cetera, fan?
Okay. Well, I don't remember the year. It was in the early 2000s. Probably 2001, 2002, somewhere around there.
Mm.
It may have been 99. I don't remember the year. My family decided one year for Christmas, instead of all of us doing gifts and what, the normal Christmassy thing, that we would all go to Disney together. Mm. And that would be our gift. We would all kind of do that as a big, that was our gift. Everybody would do that together. We stayed at the Disney Resort in Florida. We stayed at the resort. We would go to the various parks during the day. And either what I took with me to read in the evenings, I finished up early, or I didn't take anything, but I needed something to read. I was there, and I'm like, I need something to read. And there's the gift shop in the resort. And I'm looking through, and the book that caught my eye was a book called The Black Ice,
mm-hmm.
which is the second Harry Bosch novel. It had been out a while at that point, but it sounded interesting. I picked it up. I read it while we were there. Mm-hmm. I burned through it quick because I couldn't put it down.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point, I made it a point to start grabbing some other Connelly novels as I found them. Really came to be a big fan of Harry Bosch. And then from there, I discovered that Bloodwork, there was a movie called Bloodwork that was based on one of his novels. So I watched that and mm-hmm. yeah, kind of got hooked from there. And there may be a few I've not read of the early stuff, but I've read on most of his stuff at this point.
Okay. Yeah. And for those listening that aren't as familiar with it, I am going in just a second to kind of explain the overall deal, but I just kind of wanted to get up front, you know, where everybody came from on it. So, John, how did you come to be a Connelly imbiber?
It's funny. I had read The Lincoln Lawyer when it came out. I don't remember when that was. And, I was like, it was okay. It was fine. And then, I was like, I wasn't crazy about it. And then I was talking to somebody else. One of my neighbors, I think, about books that we enjoyed, and he was like, you really need to go back and read the Harry Bosch books. And I'm the kind of person, like, I read a ton, so a series with 20 books in it or whatever 18 it has now, it doesn't bother me a bit. Like, I was all right, let's do it. So I read over the course of the last 5 years or whatever, I read all of them. And I was reading in between reading other stuff, and I just really enjoyed it. I think, like you said, we could get into it, but I think there's something deceptively simple about it. And I really enjoy kind of the formula and the world and the character. So,
Oh, wow. There's a new thing. All right. We'll hold off on that. Let me set that to the side. Well, let me – I guess I got to answer the question myself, and then I'll talk about the overall deal. Connelly is a writer. He's a novelist, and he started out at the University of Florida in, like, construction, building, architecture, something, and he ended up switching to journalism and creative writing, and from there he got all into, like – crime fiction, mystery. I think he was a big fan. What was it? He was a big fan of, Raymond Chandler. Yeah, Philip Marlowe and all that. And you can see where that would kind of, lead him in the direction that obviously did. And so he ended up, while he was working as a newspaper reporter, he wrote The Black Echo. And The Black Echo, by the way, is the basis of the third season of the Bosch TV show that just came out about a week ago Friday. And Harry Bosch is his detective in the Los Angeles police, among other things, character. And then a bit later on, yeah, Bobby mentioned the Clint Eastwood movie Bloodwork. Yeah.
Yes.
Where you have a Jack McAvoy character, but he doesn't get Terry McCaleb. He doesn't have a lot of stuff. He's in a few things. His other major character is Mickey Haller, because after writing quite a few books from the perspective of the detectives, the police, he wanted to write from the perspective of a defense attorney. And the great thing about Haller is he's just almost like completely the opposite of Bosch. Mm-hmm. And so you can like them both. And I'm going to find out. We're going to take a little straw poll in a minute and see who people like better. I suspect I already know, but we'll see. So anyway, you get you know, you have like almost 20 books about Bosch. You have about 6 or 7 books about Haller. They cross over. They're in the same fictional universe. And then there came the movie, and that's how I really got into it, was the Lincoln Lawyer movie. I like Matthew McConaughey. In 2011, the movie came out, and I enjoyed that movie a great deal. I really liked that character. I liked the way McConaughey played him. And so I went to the library, and there were some Connelly books, but I noticed they were mostly Bosch. So I started getting on audio either both the Bosch books and the Haller books and listening to them. And again, they weren't really my thing at the time. And so I'm like, oh, they're okay. But somewhere along the line, I think it's when the TV show came out. The TV show, because of Titus Welliver playing Bosch, is so likable that when I first watched the first season of Bosch, and I did it very reluctantly, it was several months after it came out before I finally just sat down and said, all right, let me give this a try. I got totally sucked in, and I love the way Welliver plays Bosch, and I came to like the Bosch character a lot more now that I can envision Titus Welliver than I did when I was just having to imagine my own Bosch in my head, you know, because he was still kind of a cipher to a certain degree. He was grumpy and grouchy and got in arguments with people, but I couldn't really visualize him until Welliver came along. So
Before the show came on, in my head, he looked like Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, well, you know. Actually, in the books, he's supposed to look like House. Like, what's his name that plays House? Which is kind of what Titus Welliver looks like. Welliver looks like a slightly more macho House, really, in a lot of ways. You know, they're both kind of small, wiry, you know, but muscular guys. So, so let me ask you guys real quick while we're still kind of getting into it. John, when you saw Bosch on the TV for the first time with Titus Welliver, how did that impact how you saw the character in the books and everything? John? Have we lost John? Earth to John. Oh, dear.
Sorry. I'm here.
You there?
I'm here. I accidentally muted my mic for 2 seconds to cough and then didn't unmute it.
Didn't turn it back. Okay, so let me re-up you. So, John...
I heard the question.
I know, but we didn't hear you. I got to re-up. So, when you... when you first saw the TV show and Welliver, how did that affect how you saw the books and the character and everything?
I think it's not how... I mean, initially, I was kind of turned off because it's not how I saw Bosch in my head. But I did love... I think the TV show captured the world and the secondary characters so perfectly that I was like, well, that's it. I really love it.
Mm-hmm. Has he come to more embody him for you now, or are you still kind of getting around Welliver?
No. I mean, I've seen all 3 seasons. At this point, he is Harry Bosch.
Right.
So, and I mean, I was driving through downtown Richmond on Sunday, and I was singing the song in my head. So
yeah. I've got that CD, which we'll talk about in a minute too. I do want to mention, and Bobby, I'm going to get your answer to that, but I do want to mention that Connelly, I believe, has said that he now writes the character like it's Welliver. He's so taken with the performance. So, so Bobby, what do you think of with Welliver? I mean, how did he impact how you imagine him? You said you saw Clint Eastwood, but once you saw him, was it better, worse? How'd you do?
Because it was always in my head. It was the young Clint Eastwood,
right?
So you know, not the Dirty Harry years, but even younger.
Okay.
But when I heard that they had cast Titus Welliver, you know, my first thought was that's perfect.
Yeah.
You know, because having seen Titus Welliver in so many things, I knew that he could handle the type of character that Bosch is, because as much as we love Bosch, the actual character in real life, if you knew about that guy, he's not the nicest of guys.
No,
he's not the easiest of people to like.
No,
and I thought that Welliver would be a good enough actor. I know from his other stuff, he's a good enough actor to walk that line.
Mm-hmm.
That he can play a good guy, but he can play an asshole.
Isn't it funny that he's supposed to have a mustache, and there was like a scene in one of the shows where he has it for a minute and then he shaves it off? That was kind of like a tribute to the character. But what's funny is the other character I remember him in very vividly was on Deadwood, and on that show he had a giant mustache. He had a gigantic mustache when he was on there. So, okay, well, let's get into the things a little bit. Bosch and Haller, I want to get a straw poll up front. Bobby, who do you like best, better, Harry Bosch or Mickey Haller?
I'd go with Harry on this one.
Harry Bosch.
Yeah, I guess because I've spent more time with Harry. I enjoy Mickey Haller's appearance. But, yeah, but Mickey's kind of, you know, Bosch is more in the thick of things kind of guy. And I kind of like watching how he does things.
Okay. John, Bosch or Haller?
A Bosch. I mean, I respect Haller and how he kind of toes the line as a defense attorney trying to do everything he can, but he also is a good human being and not a complete slime ball.
Yeah.
but also I like that about Bosch, that he has an attitude that he's going to do the right thing, even if, you know, it messes up his career and everything else. So,
you know, that's an interesting point I hadn't really thought about until now, is that even though Bosch and Haller are complete opposite characters, and they really are 180 from each other, at the same time, everybody hates both of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's like for
the same people.
Yeah.
Hate both of them. Yeah.
Well, people hate Bosch despite his job. In other words, they respect his job, that he's a detective. They just don't like him personally. Whereas with Haller, they like him personally. They just hate his job, you know? It's almost the opposite. I hadn't thought about that. Right? I mean, people look at Haller and they're like, once they talk to him, they're like, well, he's not a bad guy. But man, he puts those slime balls back on the street. He's such a horrible, terrible person, you know? Whereas with Bosch, it's like, he's a detective. What a great job. And yet he's a jerk.
That's why I think one of the best things that Connelly did was putting those two together in a story.
Oh, it's always
seeing
so
how
good.
That worked.
It's always so good. And
I love them together because Bosch is very much the by the book on a lot of stuff, the important stuff.
Yeah.
And Haller is always trying to find an angle and cut corners and, you know, take some edge to get something done, and Bosch is always trying to kind of do it the right way a lot of times.
Which is funny because Bosch will then turn around and do the same thing. So he's kind of a hypocrite about it.
Sure.
He just justifies it to himself, you know. Well, this in this case I have to do it. You're doing it to get some scumbag back on the street. I'm doing it to put the scumbag away, see, so it's okay when I do it. I mean, it's interesting. They're both very flawed human beings, you know. They're not iconic at all. I mean, they are in terms of how they are as a overall, but I mean, you know, on their individual actions and stuff, they both do things that you're just like, oh, you know, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't do that. So it's really fascinating, isn't it? I'm going to say that it used to be a slam dunk for me for Mickey Haller, because I find him in his books to be, well, obviously I like Matthew McConaughey a lot, and I really liked how he played him in the movie. I would give anything if we could have McConaughey guest star on a season of Bosch.
My guess is if we get Haller to show up, it'll be someone else.
A different actor, right. On the other hand, if they would do another Lincoln Lawyer movie, they could get Welliver to be in that probably a lot easier, don't you think?
Sure.
Yeah. So,
although I do like how they've worked some things. You mentioned the Terry McCaleb, who, you know, from Blood Work, where Clint Eastwood played him in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff Daniels played his neighbor who helps him on cases, et cetera, et cetera. There is a Harry Bosch novel where, spoiler alert, Terry McCaleb, you know, at Blood Work, he gets a heart transplant.
Yeah.
There's a Harry Bosch novel where Terry McCaleb ends up is dead and Bosch is investigating it as a murder.
Yeah. And, is that the Narrows, I think? Yeah, I think it's the Narrows.
Yes, the Narrows, yes. And so the way they play it in the book, I love it, is that the movie happened, but the movie was the movie, and the character who was Terry McCaleb's friend is bitching through the entire book of how he was portrayed in the movie because they turned him into the killer because in the movie, they go, movie world, they go, it doesn't make any sense if the bad guy's just some guy he doesn't know. So he's like, he's bitching through the whole movie, a whole book about how they made him the killer in the movie.
That's great. Yeah, I do like how the stuff that happens in real life with these characters and Connolly actually ends up happening back in the books. Like, Bosch has his nice house in the hills in Hollywood because of basically a Michael Connolly movie book about one of his cases.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then after the Lincoln Lawyer movie came out, they mentioned the movie in the Lincoln Lawyer books.
What's that old saying, right? What you know?
That's hilarious. I know the first time I was reading a Lincoln Lawyer book and he's talking about, oh, that movie, it really helped my business there for a while. And I'm like, oh my gosh, come on. Come on, man. That's crazy. So, but yeah, they are interesting characters, and they're half brothers. I don't think we even said that, but they reveal that in the very first book in the Black Ice, the first or second book, right?
They don't find that out till much later.
I think Bosch does. Bosch knows about it.
I think Bosch knows, but Holler doesn't.
Right. But Holler finds out.
It's not one of those things where they, yeah. But it wasn't that early though, because the Black Ice happens way before.
But see, I was thinking in the Black Ice was when Haller finds out about the his father being the rich attorney guy that actually raised Haller but didn't raise him, and we only see Haller in a flashback as a little kid. We just don't realize it's Mickey Haller yet.
But yeah, I think it's not quite that far back. Haller first appeared in like 2005.
Yeah, in Lincoln Lawyer.
So it wasn't until 2009 that he was in a Bosch novel.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yes, thankfully I have the internet here helping.
I'm gonna place my bet that in the Black Ice, they mention Bosch knowing his father is also the father of a guy that's going to be Mickey Haller. I don't know if they identify him as Haller yet, but I think he identifies that his son is – that he's a rich dad and his son ends up being a lawyer. I just don't think he'd fleshed out the character yet.
Right. Now, that part might be in there. But, yes, actually revealing that it's Mickey Haller doesn't happen until later.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. But it is kind of neat that they're in the same universe and that these other characters are too. And, in fact – I was going to jump ahead for just a second because I just discovered, and I didn't know this until now, that there's a new character coming out. Did you guys know about this? Renee Ballard? Who is Renee Ballard?
New character.
She's a detective.
But has she been in any of the other books?
Nope.
Don't think so.
So she... he's got so many characters to spin off, I'm just surprised he's making up a whole brand new one.
Well, look, and this is not the first time he's done this, though.
Yeah.
There was a character called Jack McAvoy who is a reporter who has appeared in several of the Bosch novels, and there was an FBI agent named Rachel Walling who had appeared. Mm-hmm. Bosch actually had a relationship with her. McAvoy and Walling had a novel called The Scarecrow, which was an adventure they had.
Mm-hmm.
So he spun off one or two like that. Not a lot, but just one or two.
So what do we know about Renee Ballard? What city is she in? Is she a detective? What is she?
I think she's an L.A. detective. Mm-hmm. The name of the book that comes out this July is The Late Show. And I think it's referenced that way because she works the late shift as an L.A. detective.
Yeah. I got the Michael Connolly newsletter today, and it's talking about her. And yes, she's a driven young detective trying to prove herself in the LAPD.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I did see an interview with him a few months ago where he was saying how it's going to be more and more difficult to do Bosch books now because he's getting old. Bosch is getting older. You know, it kind of runs in real time. So Bosch has now been around for 25 years or something. Mm. And, he's already retired a couple of times. I don't want to spoil the most recent book, but I love that. We'll talk about this in a bit, but I love what they have him doing now. I thought it was a brilliant, I didn't know this even existed, but I thought it was a brilliant maneuver to get him back in the police job without having him on the L.A., and still in L.A. without working for the L.A. police. hold that thought for just a second. I want to see if there's anything else about the Bosch novels we want to talk about before we get down to the most recent ones. Go ahead, John.
I just want to talk about the universe of L.A.
Yeah.
And how in both of these, in Holler and Bosch, like a lot of it centers around kind of L.A.
Yeah.
It's all there, but L.A. is a character almost. Mm. The different neighborhoods, how the city's developed and grown, the impact of the Watts riots, and one is a big story point. And the relationship between the police and the citizens in the city runs through both Bosch and Holler books. I think there's a lot of stuff in there that's really good and really well done.
Yeah, we even get like the Rodney King stuff, mm-hmm. and the basically anything that causes a disruption in Los Angeles or something the police have to deal with, Bosch mentions or is involved in, and kind of in retro, you know, after the fact, we find out, you know, obviously he can't. It's in a later book that he'll say, oh, I was doing that during the so-and-sos, you know, during the whatever. So, the OJ trial and stuff like that. So, before we get to the later books, the earlier books, I mean, I haven't read all of them. I'll admit up front, I've read a bunch of the early ones and then a lot of the later ones, but kind of in the middle, I haven't yet finished filling in, but we've seen some of them as the storylines for the TV show. So when we look at like the first half up through like the narrows, the closers, that first half, let me go around you guys. What's your favorite one, if anything? What stands out in like the first half up through like the closers before you get to the Lincoln Lawyer? Did anything really stand out that you'd say, oh, make sure you don't miss this one?
Of just like the which novels?
Yeah, out of the books.
I really enjoyed City of Bones.
Mm-hmm.
That one's really good, and that was part of it was adapted in part of season one.
Yes,
where they find the bones in the hills.
Right.
That story to me is just it's just a really good crime drama story.
Mm-hmm.
So if. You know, if you like the show, I would definitely say that's one that you should read the book and just see how it all works together.
Yeah, that was good on the TV show. John, anything about the first half of the books that kind of jumps out that you want to mention?
No, other than just it's different. Like when he starts out, you know, some of the early books, he really is kind of just back from Vietnam. And so it's a different time period, and it's a different, you know, the character is very different, and But I like Trunk Music, which is a lot of season two was based off of. That's one of my favorite ones. So,
yeah, I've enjoyed the ones that they've done in the TV. They've done didn't they have the Concrete Blonde as part of season two also, maybe, or season one?
Yeah.
That was the stuff with Jerry Ryan came from that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I have something to say about that when we get to the TV show. But, I out of those early ones, I think the Black Ice was pretty cool. The Black mm-hmm. Ice and the Concrete Blonde kind of ran together as almost one story in a way, which is why I was surprised mm-hmm. they ended up doing differently with the TV show. Go ahead, Bob.
I was going to say, yeah, it does seem weird that the show, because each season of the show seems to grab three books and like throw them in a blender.
One more than the other two, but yeah.
Yeah. But they're not going in order.
Right.
So I find that interesting, but it's working. Having read the books, this gives me something new that I'm not expecting in the show.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah, even if you've read all the books, you can still enjoy the show because there's stuff that's familiar, but yet they're doing it in a totally different way. That's pretty cool. The other thing I was going to mention for sure is that even though they're all kind of the same, he writes them all sort of differently. Like, you know, The Last Coyote keeps cutting back and forth with him being doing like the psychoanalyst analysis with the psychiatrist police lady. You know, so you get like action, and then you get kind of him talking about himself and everything, and not wanting to, which is interesting. And then some of them are more just straight ahead detective stories, like The Concrete Blonde or The Black Ice. So
there's some that are like complete flashback kind of things,
mm-hmm,
too.
Yeah. So he really is kind of experimental with them. Okay, so then in 2005, we got a whole new series starting with Mickey Haller, and you get the Lincoln Lawyer, and he kind of bounced back and forth for a while there. In fact, for a little while there in the late 2000s, he was writing as many or more Mickey Haller books as he was Bosch. And again, I've heard him say in an interview that Haller is in some ways more challenging because, you know, with Bosch, it's like a bloodhound. You sick him on the trail and you just see what happens. Whereas with Haller, he has to actually get together with lawyers and judges that he knows and like work through how something would play out legally and, you know, how it would go in the court and what people would say and what they would object to and what the judge would say and all. And it seems like Haller's books take a lot more work from him. Does that make sense, you know?
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I think the best thing he's done to help those books too, because, you know, reading about a lawyer doing lawyer stuff could get kind of boring.
Yeah.
But the fact that he's constantly on the move.
Right.
Doing that stuff from the back of the car, he can have motion through the book and have things happening around all of that and keep it interesting.
I'd like to see a case where Mickey Haller and Better Call Saul are joint attorneys, like at the OJ trial, but with those two guys as your two attorneys. That would be entertaining, having the two of them together. Okay, so the later books, I've read all the Hallers. I'm still catching up on some of the Bosches, but I think starting with the Hallers there around 2010, 2011, and then the Bosches. I've really been enjoying these more recent ones because with Bosch, he's in the situation where he keeps getting basically forced out of the detective, you know, the police. He comes back in a different role. He gets forced out again. He's forced to retire. He's suing them. He's working as a detective, like a private detective, or, you know, I love The Crossing, because in The Crossing, he actually goes over and works, I believe, helping Mickey as a defense, like, investigator, right?
Mm-hmm. Hating every second of it.
Yeah, and hating it. Just can't stand it. So, what do y'all make of the more recent books? What jumps out? Because you got a lot more Mickey Haller mixed in there. You've got stuff where Bosch is no longer, you know, he's no longer welcome in the police. What do you think about them? You like them better, or you like the old ones better, John?
Maybe I like the older ones better, in a sense, and the newer ones have this too, but I love Bosch fighting with the police bureaucracy.
Yeah.
Like the constant internal affairs and him and Chief Irvin and all these other bureaucracy kind of things that he deals with the police and the medical examiner and all these other things. Like I love him and him trying to get around processes and get stuff done faster. I really appreciate that. So sometimes when he's out on his own and he doesn't do as much of that stuff, it's more straight detective kind of stuff. But I mean, I do really enjoy the recent ones. I like the different roles he has, the different characters. So,
Bobby, what do you think about the newer ones compared?
Oh, I would absolutely agree with what John just said. Yeah, having him being inside the police department, but having to fight against the people that he works for to get things done adds a big element to Bosch that it's still there. Like in the latest one, it's there, but it's not as much because he's not part of the LAPD anymore. And so, I do enjoy them. I've enjoyed them all. You mentioned The Crossing. That's probably one of my favorite of the newer ones.
Mm-hmm.
I also like the fact that now his daughter is with him, which gives Harry another mission, I guess, for lack of a better word. Yeah, Harry doesn't have jobs. Harry's on a mission.
Yeah. You know?
And I like having, you know, and I think that's one of the things I like that the show does, because in the show, he gets his daughter living with him a lot earlier than in the books. Because, you know, I don't know if we want to spoil this, but in the novel Nine Dragons, something happens that requires that she moves in with him,
which is a lot later than it seems to be.
Right.
I guess happening, because yeah, she's just staying with him, but for other reasons in the TV show. So,
right, because her mother is still around, and so it's probably a spoiler, but in Nine Dragons, her mother gets killed.
Yeah. No, we. That, and, it, and, But that hasn't happened on the TV show, so.
No, no. And she seems to have a bigger part on the TV show.
Yeah.
Like, in the books, she was more something Harry used her as a resource, but she never really got that involved. Mm. Or not often. Got, you know, directly involved. So, when she shows up at the end of season three and it's going, we've got, you know, the FBI is like, we got something else for you to do.
Mm.
You know, I'm curious now because I don't know where they're going with it.
Yeah, and that again, that's how the show is kind of interesting because it's giving us different stuff than the books.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the shows also spend time with the other characters, whereas in the Bosch novels, it's almost all of them are from Harry's point of view.
You know, that's a good point. I want to mention real quick that you're getting a lot more of like J. Edgar, and you're getting a lot more of Irvin, and they're more sympathetic characters. It seems like to Harry's point of view, everybody besides him and his daughter are like opponents to be defeated somehow. Even if you're his friend, he still looks at you as like a possible impediment to his mission. Whereas on the show, yeah, his partner J. Edgar gets a lot of time. The lieutenant, Billets, gets a lot of time. I got stuff to ask and say about that in a little bit. And even Irving.
Creighton Barrel,
yeah. and even Irving. I mean, Irving in the books is not a good guy. You don't like him.
Nope.
And in the first season of the TV show, you didn't like him much. His job in the first season of the TV show was to go, Bush. but I just love how what's his name, that actor. I love that actor a lot. And I love how he says, look here, Bush. But in the last couple of seasons, he's gotten much more sympathetic, and I really like Irving. I couldn't believe it. Mm-hmm. So, but here's the thing I want to mention real quick is that Renee Ballard, about that new character, I was just puzzled because Connolly has been alluding to the idea that Maddie would eventually become a cop and maybe take Bosch's place in the books. So it just troubles me that he may be putting a different female young police officer instead of using Maddie. And because
he has Maddie and Haller, and Haller's daughter and Bosch's daughter are roommates in college now together.
So they got a ways to go yet before she could even be a detective, right? So I guess
it looks like he's planning for the future with both of them.
Both, yeah. Interesting. That could be like Cagney and Lacey maybe at some point. I don't know. Okay, well, that's the Bosch books. I want to say a couple of things about the Lincoln Lawyer novels and the movie.
Troll, Earl.
Hey, boss.
Pull over up here.
Counselor?
Eddie, we had a deal. Either pay me or go with a public defender.
Another $5,000?
$10,000.
Oh. Ain't you going to count it?
I just did.
Lewis.
Yes, I'm Michael Holler.
Mr. Holler,
this whole thing is a setup. I made a mistake with that woman, and she was setting me up.
Voice down. Well, they booked this guy out.
Cops are saying he beat up the girl real bad and went assault with a deadly weapon.
Are you sure there's not anything that you're not telling me?
Nothing.
Here's the interesting thing, and then I'm going to get you guys' reaction. When the Lincoln Lawyer movie came out, about 6 years after the book, that story worked really well as a movie, and I love that movie. I mean, I've seen that movie several times. I even showed it to my wife, and she really liked it. It worked really well as a movie, and they didn't have to change a whole lot about it. I mean, they changed a few things, but not much. And the problem was that, and I'm trying to think of the exact reason, but Connolly has said he has said that when he when the producers went to make another one, to think about making another one, you know, they looked at The Brass Verdict and The Reversal and The Fifth Witness, and all three of those, they said, well, they're nice stories, but they don't really work as Mickey Haller movies. I forget exactly why. Maybe one of you guys can remind me, or maybe you have an insight. But they were saying that those three, there was something about them that's functionally different from The Lincoln Lawyer. And as such, because of how they're constructed, they would not work, in their opinion, as a movie. Does that ring a bell for either one of you before I continue on?
I don't know if I've ever heard that or not, but... I mean, it wouldn't surprise me.
Okay. Well, it was something about go ahead.
I was like, because sometimes some of the books, and I'm doing them here from memory, but, you know, not all the books have the big ending like The Lincoln Lawyer had, or, you know, they're more, you know, his books, I think his, certainly as we see with Bosch, I think Bosch works so much better as a TV show than it would as a movie.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
I don't really know their thinking there.
It's kind of coming to, I'm thinking it's something to do with how in Lincoln Lawyer, Mickey actually like changes as a character, like he goes through something where he realizes or changes or something. And the others, it's just him doing his thing, something along those lines. So he specifically wrote The Gods of Guilt to address the issues that they had, and he's been hoping The Gods of Guilt would be the second Lincoln Lawyer movie. And I'll agree that it was my second favorite.
Yeah, I'm actually hoping that with the success of Bosch, I wouldn't mind seeing the Amazon do a Lincoln Lawyer series.
That would be so cool. Yeah, it would work so much better as an Amazon show than as like a big television ongoing show, because you could just take like one or two of the books and do a whole, you know, like a Bosch, do a whole like 10 episode season.
And there's also something about when you know you're going to release all 10 episodes at one time, you don't have to depend on that week's lag between episodes. So you don't feel the need to have each episode actually come to a conclusion of something.
Right.
You draw it out. Because some of the Bosch episodes, if you just watched one, man, this is a little slow. But when you binge watch like I did and watch three or four a night.
Oh, yeah.
It moves, you know, you're looking at it as this one whole. And I think the fact that they're making these four people to watch over the span of a week, as opposed to over the span of 10 weeks, it changes the way they film it. It changes the way they write it. It changes the way they direct it. They don't have to go, okay, we're coming up on the 45 minute mark. We need a shootout.
Yeah, you're right.
Somebody needs to be arrested, or they don't do that. They can get to where they get to go and stop, pick up next episode, picks right back up and keeps going.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that they do them that way, whereas if this was on, say, CBS, the show would be totally different.
Oh, yeah. Well, on a show, on like a CBS version, they would do a book per episode or two almost. And you'd run out of stories within like one season. Whereas the way Amazon does it, you do a book a season and you've got five or six seasons of show. John, I want to get your thoughts on Mickey Haller's books, on The Lincoln Lawyer and the other Lincoln Lawyer books, and kind of, you know, what do you think about what Bobby is talking about here?
No, I mean, I agree on the episode thing. And it would be a better TV show. I mean, because there's a lot of that court procedural stuff that kind of, you know, is too... Well, it takes too long to explain, and it's too complicated to cram it into a movie, but could work in a TV show. The other thing with the Haller books that I've, just like with the Bosch books, is he does a great job developing the secondary characters. Mm-hmm. You know, the Lorna, his ex-wife who runs the office, you know, one of his ex-wives, right, who runs his office. You know, Cisco, the private investigator, who's now married to his ex-wife, who works for him. You know, the Jennifer Ronson, who's like the second chair attorney, and these other characters who work for him and do these things. And, you know, they have these great great relationships and all this kind of back and forth because like she's his ex-wife and stuff, and there's his other ex-wives involved, that I think adds a lot to the dynamics of the characters interacting and the plots of the stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's true. John, how would you rate the Lincoln Lawyer movie?
I enjoy it. I mean, I like the actor a lot. I think he's really good. But it's an entertaining movie. I watch it. I enjoy it. But and if they made another one, I'd watch it. I'd be in. But I just like the Bosch TV series more because they can do so much more, go so much more in depth.
They did have
it worked. It worked because of McConaughey. I think if somebody else was in that role, that movie would be like.
They had to cram a whole lot in too. Go ahead, Bobby.
I was like, and McConaughey's still getting Lincoln commercials out of the deal.
He sure is. That's awesome. It makes me happy every time I see a Lincoln commercial with him. I'm like, oh, I know why he's in this. That makes me happy. Yeah, they had to cram so much into that movie. I mean, it was pretty packed. You know, there wasn't a spare minute, really. Even the stuff that like if you watch the first half of that movie, you think, okay, there are a few throwaway scenes. Well, really, no. I mean, you know, it all comes back to matter by the end. So I do wish that they would make the TV show like you guys are talking about. If they don't, I wish they'd make another movie and use the Gods of Guilt, because I really did like that one a bunch. I like how Mickey kind of gets on his soapbox as the first person narrator. That's another thing, by the way, is that Connolly experiments on point of view and voice. And I like that I'm a big fan. I know that some people don't like it at all. But I'm a big fan of first-person narrative. And I like that Mickey Haller basically gives us his first-person point of view in his books. They're not – I mean, Bosch's books, they vary, but most of them are third-person, right? Mm-hmm. You know, where Bosch did this, Bosch did that. Whereas I believe
It seems like the Bosch novels do first-person more now since he's already doing it with the Haller books.
Yeah.
It seems like he does it more now. But you're right. Yeah, there are some that are – he changes who's the narrator.
Whereas Haller, oh, you know what? And in fact, the one that I'm currently reading is I'm rereading The Reversal. And in The Reversal, every other chapter is Bosch third person, Haller first person. That's kind of off-putting in a way. I mean, when it works, it works. But you're like, whoa, we go from third person to first person to third. So in other words, it's like Bosch did this, Bosch did that, and then you go to a Haller chapter, and it's like, I did this, I did that, you know. And then it switches back over to Bosch did this, Bosch did that. So that one's almost too experimental for me. I almost don't want that much variation in the structure, you know what I mean? But are you going to do one that way, Bobby? Are you intrigued now? You're like, I've got to do that.
I've seen other writers do that, and now I don't want to change it up. You know, I stick with mine. Yeah. You know, I have a point of view character per chapter, but that might change. But no, they're not speaking first person.
Well, I've written two books. Yeah, two books in first person. And I really enjoyed that. I basically got that from how Zelazny did the Amber books. And, you know, you get that Corwin and Merlin first-person point of view. And so I said, oh, I got to do that with mine. And I really enjoyed it, but I couldn't do it all the time. I think I'd lose my mind if I was always saying, I, you know. It's okay in small doses.
Yeah, I almost did the Snow books that way. I started writing one first-person, and I decided to go back and change it because I like to bounce around. I like to leave my lead character.
Exactly.
What people are doing. And that's harder to do when you're doing first person.
Absolutely. I always say, not to go too far in the weeds on technical stuff, but those that like crime novels will be interested to know how they're done. And Bobby writes crime novels. I write science fiction superhero novels, as most of you know, but I would love to write a crime novel. One day, Bobby, one day I'm going to get the confidence to really try it. But
we'll have to team up on one.
That would be awesome. See, I could, if I had training wheels, if I had you holding me up so I don't fall over, I could feel a lot, I'd feel a lot better about it. That'd be awesome. But yeah, I lost my train of thought there. But yeah, it is interesting how he does experiment on different points of view and everything. Just sometimes it maybe gets a little much. But
and I think the show is a good representation of that because imagine if Bosch if Bosch was in every scene.
That was it. That's what, yeah, you said that. I was going to say, that's the first thing you learn when you sit down to write a first-person book, is that it's a travelogue of the main character, because you can't show anything that's not happening right in front of your main character. Right. And that's extremely limiting. It's extremely limiting, because if you want to go off and show what the bad guys are doing, you can't, unless it's happening right in front of the main character, which is kind of problematic to have the bad guys doing something important right in front of the main character.
Or you have to fall back on the character going, well, I didn't know at the time, but...
You're right. That's, yeah, you see, you start pulling out these little tricks. That's the only other way you can do it. That's right. Okay, well, that's the books and the Lincoln Lawyer. Any other thing you guys want to say about the books or about the Lincoln Lawyer books before we talk about TV a little bit?
You should read them if you haven't.
I do love the Lincoln Lawyer books. I think pound for pound, I'm enjoying the recent Bosch books as much as I am anything. But I think, given a choice out of all the oeuvre or whatever, I would probably take the Howler books first and then the Bosch. But again, I identify more with Mickey Howler. I think that says bad things about me. But I think the two of you know me well enough to be like, yeah, that's probably true. But I just like Mickey better in some ways. I don't know. Anyway, well, then came, like we were talking, we talked a good bit about it already, but then came the TV show. And Amazon put out, they found Titus Welliver to play Bosch, which everybody thinks is inspired. He does a great job. And we got that first season, which was, I believe, City of Bones and Trump Music, maybe? Or was Trump Music second season?
Wait a minute, I know this. I saw this a minute ago. Wait a minute, where was it?
Oh, it was City of Bones and The Last Coyote, wasn't it? Because he's in the, he's being, no, he's on, it's one where he's on trial. Remember?
The first season, City of Bones, Echo Park, and Concrete Blonde.
Right.
That's right. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Season two is Trunk Music, The Drop, and The Last Coyote.
Yeah.
And the third season is The Black Echo and part of A Darkness More Than Light.
Right.
And yeah. This thing also says that season four.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Will be based on Angel's Flight and Nine Dragons.
See, I haven't read either one of those, so I don't know anything. Now I got to go out and read Angel's Flight and Nine Dragons. And those were 10 years apart. So it's like what you're saying about the order they're doing them in is so crazy. They're just jumping all around and taking the plot, but it's like there's a... It's kind of like with James Bond, you know, where there's like there's a book chronology James Bond the character, and there's a movie chronology James Bond the character, and they were just picking out plots from the books and fitting them onto the James Bond movie character. Well, here there's the Bosch TV character, and they're taking the plots from the books and plugging them into the TV show character.
Mm-hmm.
So that's weird, but it seems to, and it's not without precedent, obviously. It's exactly how they did James Bond, but it seems to be working. So, well, tell us what should we expect from Angel's Flight and which one did you say?
Nine Dragons.
I haven't read either one of those. Have you guys?
I've read them both. I'm trying to remember Angel's Flight now.
It's got Eleanor Wish in it. That's interesting.
Yeah.
And Nine Dragons has got Eleanor again. And I bet that's the one where
Angel's Flight's the one where the guy gets killed in the cable car.
Yes.
In the funicular kind of cable car. And he's a lawyer who sues the city for police brutality and racism and stuff.
Oh, here we
go. And Bosch is given the investigation to investigate his murder, which, of course, All the cops in the city are kind of, you know, didn't like the guy, and they're all suspects.
Yeah. That's a great place to put Bosch in, a great position, so that's wonderful.
Yeah.
And I imagine Nine Dragons is, like, going to give us more of the plot with Eleanor and Hong Kong and everything. They seem to be like setting that up.
Nine Dragons, the book takes place in Hong Kong. In the novel, and obviously the show will have to do something different, I'm sure, but... In the novel, Maddie is kidnapped
right
in Hong Kong.
Right.
And Bosch goes to Hong Kong to help get her out. And it also involves stuff with Reggie and Eleanor and spoiler alert, Eleanor is killed trying to rescue Maddie.
Which is how we end up with Maddie staying all the time with Harry.
Right.
I can totally see them setting that up because, again, spoiler for the recent season, Maddie tells Eleanor she wants to stay with Harry, and Eleanor is like, what have you done to her? And Harry's like, I had nothing to do with it. That's her, you know. So they're basically making us understand that if something should happen that Maddie has to stay with Harry, she's okay with that. It wouldn't be like, no, don't put me in there with him, you know. So that's interesting. I can see them setting it up now. It all starts to make sense. Let's see.
And if memory serves too, Angel Fly is a good Irving on one side of and Bosch on the other side of an issue.
Ooh. Oh, 100%.
So there's some really good head banging between those two.
Okay.
And Angel's Flight to Marvel.
And I have to say, like, that to me is the biggest difference between the books and the TV show is Irving. Like, there's never any point of view chapters with him, I don't think, in any of the books.
Mm-hmm.
And you just don't like him, and he's this kind of force that Bosch has to work around and deal with. And in, like you said, in the TV show, I feel sympathy for him, and
mm-hmm.
Right, because in the novels, we only see Irving from Harry's point of view, and Harry doesn't like him,
so we don't like him.
Right. So, right or wrong, we're. Most of this stuff, most of these characters we see through Bosch-colored glasses.
Right.
But, I have to say this again, like the casting and the acting and the writing and stuff for the secondary characters in the TV show is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like Creighton Barrel and J. Edgar and the Lieutenant Billets and, the Death Sergeant Cop.
Yeah.
And, just the other people, the street people that they interact with and the cops that are just kind of the patrol cops and stuff. It's and the prosecutors, the lead district attorney.
Oh, God.
All those guys are really well done. And it really adds something to the show.
They're vivid. Absolutely. They don't get a whole lot of screen time, but they make the most of it with them. They paint you a nice picture. Even the patrolman guy that Bosch is kind of down on, like he keeps busting on him, you know, and then at the end he's like, maybe there's hope for you after all or something. I might start liking you after all or something. Just from a few lines, you sketch out that character. That's interesting.
Yeah. And it's one of those where, the characters that don't seem important, didn't seem important last season, become a little more important this season just because now they're doing something. Or, things like that. And,
One thing I have an issue with is, and not an issue, but it bothers me, is that the books I like the best are the most recent ones. And I know that we're never going to get them on the TV show because that'll be like the end. And they won't know it's the end. And so they won't make them. And so I'd like to see The Crossing and The Wrong Side of Goodbye. And I'm not sure how you do those without moving Harry toward the finish line, you know what I mean?
Right. Well, also, speaking of changes to the show, because of the nature of TV and liking to get characters in there and stay, I'm actually surprised J. Edgar is still on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Because Harry goes through partners pretty quick in the book.
Yes.
Yeah, that surprised me too.
As much as I like J. Edgar and I like the actor that plays him, and I thought his story in season 3 was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of curious now if this is his, even though J. Edgar still shows up in the books, but he's not his partner anymore. I'm curious if we're going to start moving into him having other partners, or if they're going to just start adapting those partner roles to fit J. Edgar, because that's the actor we've got for the show.
Yeah. I was curious because when certain things happen in season 3, I was thinking, okay, they're moving J. Edgar out of the way. And then you're like, well, no, it seems like they're not. So it's very interesting. It's very interesting. I'd love to be a fly on the wall in the writer's room on this show just to see how they decide what to use, what to change, what to mash up, what to leave out. you know, because they're like I said, they're this is television Harry Bosch, and he has his own story, and it's based on the books, but it is not adapting the books so much as just borrowing chunks of them. You know, it's, you know what it is, it's almost like how Master and Commander the movie was made. They named it after two books rather than one, and then they put stuff from like nine other books in it too. And it's kind of the same thing. You get a framework, and then they just are kind of making up a whole new universe.
Well, I do like the idea of, you know, I think I mentioned earlier, like they throw three books in a blender.
Yeah.
I like the fact that, okay, season one's adapting three novels, but it's not like we're doing one, okay, we finished that one, here's the second one, okay, right, we finished that one, here's the third one. No, no, it's a little of this one, a little of here. You're back and forth. See, it's almost like it's the probably the closest you see to real TV or to real police work, because he has multiple cases to work at one time.
Yeah, that's true.
And because, you know, most TV procedurals, you know, they've got one case and they work that case till they solve it, which is nothing like reality.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think Bosch, because they are, like, there's one in season three where they're pulling in to go interview someone. They get a call on another case and they leave.
Yes.
And then later have to go back. Mm-hmm. And then that's very true to how real, mm-hmm, you know, real police work happens.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I like what Van, what you were saying about how they kind of adapted his backstory for the TV show. Like, mm-hmm, he's still a war veteran, but instead of Vietnam, it's, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan.
Right.
And he still has some of the same background. His, you know, basically the way he grew up and with his mother and the youth homes and that kind of stuff is the same. Mm-hmm. But it's a different time period, and Los Angeles was different then. But in the relationship with the city and the police department's a little different. But I think they did a really good job kind of just picking it up and moving it into what could be, you know, a contemporary story for Titus Welliver.
Los Angeles is an interesting, like you said, it's like a character, and it's there's so many good movies and books and stories, TV shows that have made Los Angeles a character. You know, it goes all the way back to like Chinatown with Jack Nicholson showing you, you know, right after World War II when LA first really took off. And that gets me to the thing I was going to mention about The Wrong Side of Goodbye. Is it's not really a plot spoiler, it's just a situational detail. I had no idea that San Fernando was the only independent municipality inside like Los Angeles County. And so I did some research because I was reading that book and I was just flabbergasted with the idea that like right square in the middle of this giant city is a separate city, like a little enclave the size of like the town where I live, with its own police force. And they're just like a little island, like a tiny little island. And it turns out that what happened was, and they talk a little bit in the book, but I did some research too, in case you guys didn't know, is that Los Angeles itself wasn't all that big either back, you know, decades and decades ago. And when they brought the water in through the tunnels and the pipes and everything, they brought in all this water to Southern California, L.A. controlled it. And they said the only people that can access this water are people that are part of Los Angeles. And so all the other towns, like, annexed themselves onto Los Angeles and quit being whatever they are and started being Los Angeles. And the only one that didn't was San Fernando.
Hmm.
So San Fernando is this tiny little town right in the middle of Los Angeles. And so when Harry can't work for the Los Angeles police, he just goes and works for San Fernando, and he's still in the middle of Los Angeles. That's brilliant. I just love that. I thought that was the greatest idea ever. I can't tell you. I was blown away. I'm like, this is genius. He's found a way to keep him as a policeman with a badge and a station house in L.A. and yet not work for the L.A. police department. That's great. So I just thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, because I think Harry works better when he is a cop than when he's not.
Right, yeah.
Because we've seen multiple novels where he's not, because obviously, as you mentioned, he retired once before and then worked some cases on his own. And those were good, but yeah, having Harry with a badge helps.
When he doesn't have a badge, it hurts him, and you feel it in the writing, and it makes you uncomfortable. It's, again, another Master and Commander example I wasn't planning on making, but it just occurs to me, is there's one of the Master and Commander books where Captain Aubrey loses his commission. He's no longer a captain. He's like kicked out of the Navy briefly. And you just hate life for him. He's just miserable because that's his identity. And it's the same with Bosch. Bosch's whole identity is I'm a police detective going after the bad guys, you know. And it's just he loses a lot when he doesn't have that moral force behind him. So I had a couple of questions about the TV show, the most recent season, and as we move toward our conclusion here, and I want to run these by you guys and see what you think. And those of you that haven't watched season three, fast forward about a minute ahead here. But so we never got to see the district attorney in season three having to admit that he was wrong and Bosch was right about the director.
Right.
In other words, he kept saying all along, you got to settle the case, you got to settle the case, you got to settle the case, because there's no way we can win, there's no way we can win. Bosch is a liability. So when Bosch solves the case, I wanted a scene where that stupid district attorney is like, all right, let's go ahead and go to trial, because, yeah, Bosch was right and I was an idiot. We never got anything like that. It disappointed me. Did that register?
But you don't get that in the books either.
Yeah, I know.
Like these guys are in love. They won't admit that you know Harry saved their bacon. You know.
No. They'll find some other reason to be mad at him and screw him over.
Yeah, it's true.
There's no triumphs. There's no
you're
parades
right.
for Bosch.
That's true.
Yeah. It's because to the DA, the higher ups, the bureaucracy, Harry's not a team player.
No. He's the exact opposite.
And so you know, they keep him at a distance because as soon, you know, if Harry gets one whiff of one of them dirty, you know, or they've done something wrong, they know he's like a dog with a bone.
He's not going to just say, "It's all right, fella. I know you're doing a good, you know." Yeah, no, he's going to. Yeah,
there like and he's like that with his relationships. You're either with him or against him, like when in season three, when he breaks up with the DA, the one who's working, the assistant DA who's working the case, you know, and she's like, "I hope we can still be friends," and he goes like, "What's the point?"
Yep, that's true. That was weird. Yeah. That was very awkward. I think there was a scene in season three somewhere where he, a police officer was doing something, and Harry like goes out of his way to tell him, "You better not do it that way. I'll bust you if I see you doing it that way," or something. I can't remember what it was, but you get the sense that any other cop would have just looked the other way, and Harry like goes over and basically tells the guy, "I'm going to arrest you if you do that," you know, which is very Bosch.
Or like when you mentioned the officer, the patrol officer that he kind of talks down a couple of times because that guy's kind of like, he's like, "What's the point of chasing this down? Nobody cares. He's a homeless guy." And, you know, Bosch is like, "Well, I care.
Everybody counts or nobody counts." Yeah,
exactly.
Well, and that is the part about Bosch that I love, the idea that he cares about every single murder and that person, whoever the lowest street person, deserves the same level of serious investigation as the most important person in Los Angeles. And the brass, the senior leadership of the police department doesn't always view it that way.
Yep. That's right. A couple other things. I'd like to see a Lincoln lawyer show and they bring in that director for Mickey to be his client. That would be hilarious because Mickey would defend him.
Mm-hmm.
The last half of the last episode of season three was basically a trailer for season four, but we kind of talked about where we see that's going. Just really quickly, a couple other subplots. The Billet subplots was left hanging. I'm wondering if we're going to come back to that. Where the captain, that other lady, was having issues with Billet, and then she was gone on personal leave, and she's also married to Billet's ex-husband. I didn't realize that at the time. I know they showed him at the picnic, and I didn't realize that was the captain because she had her hair down.
Right. No, that was when I saw her. I was like, "Oh crap!" It's so awkward.
So awkward. I didn't realize it till later when they said something about that was her. She's married to my ex-husband. So there was a lot of like innuendo about Lieutenant Billet, and I was just trying to figure out where that's going because it never really went anywhere.
Well, in the books, you know, Billet is gay.
Yeah,
and she dated. In the book, she dated a character who worked for her. And we actually saw that.
They had that in the
one.
TV show. They referenced.
Yeah, yeah, they referenced it for sure.
Because it was Kisman Ryder was the character's name. Because she actually becomes one of Bosch's partners later.
Yeah, yeah.
So, so I think part of that's what it's the whole, you know, because there was a complaint, not from Kisman, but there was a complaint from somebody who took it upon themselves to think that it was bad that the captain was dating one of the people under her, or the lieutenant was dating one of her subordinates.
Right.
And so it caused problems, and those problems were part of what kept her from being promoted to captain. Although in the books, too, I think her being gay played a part in her not being promoted to captain.
I did like that the one thing Billets did that was effective was flattering the captain. Like, she's saying, well, we did so-and-so, and the captain's like, well, I don't know. And she says, because of your great leadership. You know, she's like, yeah, well, that's true. You know? Like, okay, she's just buttering her up. That was cool. What became of the Jerry Ryan subplot? Like, the first two episodes of season three, you know, we were left hanging with the idea that she was getting away with stuff, and then she was never mentioned again or never showed up again. So we were waiting to see if they were going to take her back to trial, and we never found out. Are they going to bring that back again?
I suspect we'll see. Because Harry's not a character to let something not go like unfinished like that.
Yeah.
That's right.
I imagine we will see something in season four.
And my last question about season three, at the end of the season, Bosch basically told J. Edgar he's no longer sure the cops don't have to use the same tactics as the criminals. What do y'all make of that? Is that a direction we're going in season four, or is that just what's up with that?
I was going to say, like, the thing about season three that kind of led to that comment was this, to me, season three was the real Bosch because it was kind of him being angry and fighting with the department and his partners and kind of off doing his own thing. And, So that just a lot of the books where Bosch has that kind of anger and he doesn't get along with other people, and you know, he's working through he's got that kind of a dog or the bone on the case and he can't give it up. He just keeps focusing on that, and all the other stuff just goes to hell. It doesn't matter because he's going to solve the case. And I think season three did the best job of doing that. But go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, because he's getting hammered from all sides.
Yes.
He's being hammered from the guy who's investigating him because he's been framed. He's being hammered from the department about this problem. He's being hammered by his daughter because she wants to do this. I mean, there's just so much. It's hitting Harry. And he's just – but he's got this laser-like focus, and then he's got all these things trying to jump in front of him.
I really enjoyed Arnold Vosloo's character. He was the ex-cop, the older guy that was like orchestrating the frame of Harry. I like that he was so world-weary and cynical that when he saw everything was going against him, he was just kind of like, okay, what we need to do now? You know? He just never put up a fight at all. He was so cocky and arrogant when he was winning, but it was like as soon as he started losing, he's just kind of like, okay. He just rolled over completely. What do I got to admit to? You know, roll it out here. You know?
I got Mickey Holler on speed dial.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I tell you, there's so many times in the show now that I'm wanting somebody to give Mickey a call. I really am. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
Well, and I think that's the beauty of the show, too. These characters, because that character could have easily been written as just a one-note character, the Arnold Vosloo character.
Yeah, yeah.
But the fact that he, like, when he finds out the reason they're waiting is because J. Edgar's been shot, he's like, no problem.
Yeah.
And he's still like, he's still like a cop, even though he's a former cop and a dirty.
He still thinks of himself as a cop. Yes,
exactly. Yeah, and I love that it's not one of those things they felt the need to beat us over the head with. Like the cops were like, "Yep, we know you got it," and you know, and I love that. I mean, I don't. Yeah, subtlety works, and I think some you know they do it so well that you know.
Even the bit with the sugar was funny. Where. They thought they don't like it. They think less of him because he wants any sugar, and so he says, "Put two sugars in it." And Harry just turns the thing upside down, and he's drinking it right. And then at the end, he's like, "Yeah, give me some more coffee and a little easier on the sugar."
Yeah.
That was pretty
good. Because he knows those tricks. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he's not giving them what they, you know, he's going, I'm not going to give you what you want is for me to go, you know. You know.
That was
so
good.
Yeah, a lot of, just a, you know, and all three seasons, I think, were good with that, with some of these characters that are doing things for, you know, for whatever reasons. I mean, so, yeah, just beautifully created, well-rounded characters.
Yeah. It's amazing we get it all in just, like, what, 10 episodes? It seems like it runs longer in a way. They just cram a lot into those, a lot of those episodes. One other thing I want to mention, and I'll go around and see if you guys want to do any final thoughts. The fantastic theme song for the show, for those that don't know, is called Can't Let Go, which is a perfect song for just the title alone for Bosch. But it kind of is a jazzy thing, which is perfect for Bosch, and it has a good title for Bosch, Can't Let Go. And that's by Caught a Ghost, and the name of the band is Caught a Ghost. And if you have access to Amazon Music or iTunes or whatever, or wherever you get your music, go and just check out some of their music, because I went on there and found that one song because I liked it as the theme song for Bosch, and I downloaded it, and then I thought, well, I'm going to check out some of their others. And I was, it was so funny. I was checking them out one at a time and listening. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll get that one. That's good. And then number three, oh, I like that one. That's good. And I ended up buying the entire album like one song at a time. So, well, I think I bought so many songs from it that I got the rest for free because I'd paid for the entire album at that point. But it really is that good. I mean, trust me, the whole, it's varied. It doesn't all sound like Can't Let Go, but it sounds enough like it that if you like that, you'll like Caught a Ghost. So I give them my highest recommendation. I was wearing that. My daughters and my wife were just so sick of Caught a Ghost there last year when Bosch was on, because I was playing it on my iPhone and on the speaker all the time. So,
and jazz is a very important part to the Harry Bosch.
Yeah.
Novels and as well. I mean,
yeah.
And to Michael Conley. Michael Conley is a huge jazz fan. Mm. Actually, I think he's produced a couple of like documentaries of jazz performers. So the jazz has always been very important, not just in terms of what Harry's listening to on a CDs in the books, or he goes to watch like jazz musicians play, and it's a good inside to Harry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he plays it constantly on a turntable in his little house that projects out on the stilts over the over the hills. I like
that. Let me just say yeah. too, that is a beautiful set.
Oh yes, it works so well.
Oh, so well done.
Yeah, could you imagine just being able to just stand there and just see the city?
Well, that's the thing. In the books, it works well enough from descriptions, but on the TV show, it's almost like. On the TV show, it's almost like the equivalent of a sci-fi movie where they bring up a hologram of the whole galaxy, you know?
Yeah.
He's able to bring up this glass wall that's just a picture of the entire city that he's, like, looking over like a guardian angel. It's a very effective visual metaphor, and it's very effective in terms of kind of locating him. I do like in the books how you learn all the geography of that area. Like, I now very firmly know that Mulholland Drive and Woodrow Wilson like go up into the mountains there. I've even gotten on Google Maps and gone around and followed those roads, and man, those are curvy like a Formula One track. Those roads are so curvy up in the mountains. I like to go out there and drive around there sometime just to see what it's like.
I love the scene in season 3 where he's teaching his daughter to drive.
Yeah.
And he's going, you've got to watch for what's up ahead on these curvy roads.
Yeah.
And then an episode later, he's in a car chase on those roads, and he's doing exactly what he told her to do.
And well, he calls her to have a wreck, too, or run into a – she knocked a mirror off, yeah. And then he says, that was my fault. I shouldn't have been distracting you, which is true. But that's so funny. Okay, so let's move toward our conclusion. Any last thoughts about Connelly in general, John?
I love the interconnectedness of the universe, the entire – LA criminal justice system is this one thing that he keeps plugging in different parts to, but there's a consistency to it that I really appreciate, and now a depth to it with all these different characters and stories. And in terms of Bosch, the character, I just love his determination and focus. So,
bye.
That all sounds good. I'll take it. Absolutely. He's created these wonderful characters that inhabit this one universe that is Los Angeles. And if you like, I would say if you like the Harry Bosch stuff, or you, you know, to certainly try The Lincoln Lawyer, there are a few other books. You can try Blood Work. There's two books with Terry McCaleb, and there's The Scarecrow, which, you know, features the reporter. So there's a lot of different characters if you want to try something that's a little different, because those are not cops, per se. Right. So he's got a few of those out there. And that if you are a Michael Connelly fan, there are two novels coming out this year that you should definitely try. We mentioned The Late Shift. There's also a new Harry Bosch novel scheduled to arrive in October. Yay. Called Two Kinds of Truth. So we'll see Harry still working, you know, in his new position. But there's an old case from his LAPD days comes back to cause some trouble.
Oh, I hope Mickey's still around. I hope Mickey's still around in it. I as much as I like them both separately, when they're together, it's so much fun. It's just so much fun because they have to get along with each other, and yet they're totally opposite in every way. See, that's we were talking before about how they're opposite, but yet now that they're half brothers and then their daughters are buddies, they have to get along, you know? And so it's like neither one of them wants to be best buddies with the other, but they kind of have to be. And it's so fun. I just love that chemistry. That dynamic is great. I'll give Connelly a supreme compliment. You'll appreciate this, John. He's not bad for a gator. Da, 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 da. So, all right. Let me.
The fact that you read him after you learned that and you still talk about him, right? I'm impressed.
Hey, now he's not a Bama guy. I had to draw a line somewhere, okay? I have to draw the line somewhere. Gators are okay, I guess. We got to thank our patrons on Patreon for keeping this show on the air and afloat. There's a couple of changes coming up at the end of June that hopefully will let us do even more shows on the White Rocket Entertainment Network channel. I've got some ideas in mind that are actually going to cost us less money than we're paying now. We'll have more shows on the air. So you'll be hearing more about that as we go along. But I want to thank our patrons, particularly, of course, Nicholas Cottrell, our top-tier patron, and also David Medinas, Mark Squire, Dave Powell, Jared Albrick, Michael Kirshner, Bill Matthews, and Joey Miller. You guys are a million times over appreciated for everything you do to keep us afloat at the White Rocket Network. Anybody out there that wants to contribute to help keep our shows going, because we have to pay to keep them on the air, basically, just go to Patreon, patreon.com/Van Allen Plexico, and that's pretty much the account. Or you can just go to patreon.com and search for Van Plexico, and that's pretty much the White Rocket account. Every cent that comes through there, it doesn't go to buy me books, it doesn't go to buy me lunch, it goes to keep our shows afloat, to keep Podbean happy, keep us on multiple channels on there with this show, the Auburn show, and the Avengers show. So we really appreciate it. Okay, guys, I guess we're going to wrap up for tonight. I appreciate John and Bobby, you guys coming on, and maybe after season 4 we'll reconvene and talk about that, because there will be a season 4.
Yes,
sounds good.
All right, thanks much, guys, and the Rocket's going to get out of here for another week, and we'll see you guys down the road.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.